The comments within the following podcast are those of any show hosts and not representative of any company in which the show hosts may represent.
Welcome to podcast number 337. My name is Jared Reimer, and thanks so much for listening to this edition of the Technology Blog and Podcast. Some corrections from last podcast. It's always good to get corrections, and I may have said some things wrong, and so Sean Everest sent some corrections in regards to my commentary and understanding of his email from podcast 336. I have a very interesting talk about buildings on the internet found from Sans News Bites, and this was quite interesting. Would you like your elevator to be controlled either by an app or connected to the internet, where if you're riding in it to go to a floor, it just stops? I recently got an email that had a bug report with a URL that was broken. I have since fixed that, and I know exactly what happened, and these types of mistakes happen. On jaredreimer.info, I decided to try and write a 404 page with a little bit of help with some buttons I found in the control panel to make it easier for someone to report where they were and what exactly they were looking for, which caused the error. I have a blog post which doesn't seem to have the code that I was trying to illustrate in it. However, this was quite an interesting topic because I was able to find and fix it in 5 minutes with this 404 page. Finally, I have found a Dumb Criminal Award for this particular podcast, thanks to Krebs on Security. I'm not going to give anything away. You'll just have to find out. Contact information will be at the end of the podcast. And until next podcast, I am Jared Reimer saying thanks so much for listening. And make it a great day. Welcome to podcast number 337, everybody. I am Jared Reimer, and the podcast is quite interesting nowadays because we have to cover the various aspects of security because that's the way the world works. And it's a very interesting balance because last podcast I was talking about Sean's email and he sent some corrections that I made by email, and of course, I don't want him just participating, I want each and every one of you participating. Whether I said something incorrectly on the security aspect of stuff, if I'm talking about Braille, specific things without mentioning any software, and I've made a mistake, it's always good to get corrections. And of course, in one of the emails, Sean was investigating the two-step systems. And each two-step system is going to have its pros and cons. And of course, as we said last time, you only get charged by your provider for SMS. You don't get charged by the website. But he wanted me to know that fax was going away, not fiber. I said fiber was going away. It's the underground landlines and the traditional copper landlines. Now, traditional landlines, he says, now are voice over IP and do sound better than your mobile phone. I say that depends on the area. And each area is going to be different. For example, LiveWire, which is based in the United States, now has a telephone network that you can use an app with, both for iOS and Windows. And all of that information is available on the website. You must have an account and you have to authenticate. This means that anyone around the world can call into LiveWire without incurring international or long distance charges. And that's great too. And the only reason why I brought up LiveWire here in this discussion is because LiveWire, a lot of the lines are voice over IP lines. And there are times where there is trouble with them. It could be garbled at times. It could be dropping people at times. But there are also other factors too. And I'm not saying that voice over IP is perfect at all. The copper lines have been around a very long time, and how they survived this long, well, I'm not exactly sure. Seeing how it rains and the lines could be damaged, you know? But it also depends on how much you're able to pay, too. In some parts of the world, it could be quite expensive to have phone service, and it may not be suitable for you, according to his email. And, of course, Braille 2000's Bob Stepp, his voice landline connection now rings him both on the phone at home and on his cell phone. Just like Sean mentions in his email, your provider should ask you if you want both for your landline connection. But I don't know of many providers that offer both landline and cell service. I know AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile and Sprint do in the United States. I know Verizon also offers landline service and AT&T does, but I don't know if T-Mobile and Sprint do. So if you have service with those providers in the United States, I'm not sure how to tell you to proceed except to ask. And so in the topic of DVD and CDs, he says that he likes CDs in a stereo, and so do I. But when I moved, it was time for it to go. To be honest, I don't even use CDs anymore. Jaws doesn't even provide a DVD anymore because it's just not effective to do that anymore. And so they might as well just give us a download. They gave us a serial number. It works. And it's going to be a good thing. When he talked about somebody at home who has a stereo system hooked up to the computer and playing music through it, we had that set up at my own house where I used to live, but I have no idea how it works. I honestly thought it was cool, and my dad was the only one that got it to work. So that is that. Now, he talks about this particular gentleman saying that he uses the FLAC format, and so the particular song is 1 gigabyte because it's 7.1 FLAC. Now, I don't know much about the FLAC format, although I know that Magnatune has FLAC files that you can download. I prefer the MP3s at 128, but you can also download the RAW WAV files, which are the best format. So that is where we are at the moment. As he states, as I was communicating with him, the providers he's used, VoIP sounds better. Of course, you're going to have the dropouts and things I've covered earlier in this talk. He's downloaded several files and streamed something and have not had a problem. He may have a little bit, but it's not as bad with 8 to 10 files downloading. So, this is a very interesting discussion. And that's why I decided at one point when he sent me some stuff to go ahead and talk about it, because it changes the landscape of technology altogether. And, you know, just like the floppy disk has finally died off, at some point, the CD and DVD will do the same. The cassette's pretty much gone. And I get people asking me, where do you buy cassettes? And I'm saying, you can't get them anymore. There may be some stores that sell them, but as far as I'm aware, it's CDs, DVDs, and others. And so, Sean, thanks for participating. And folks, if I've made any mistakes in the way I've presented something, and you click through to read the article, and I've made a mistake trying to explain something that I've read, and you want to correct the record, I definitely want to hear from you. I appreciate Sean taking the time to send me email and communicating with me in regards to this particular set of topics he has brought up, and I tried to do the best I can, but he said, you know what, this is wrong, let's correct the record. And so that's what I'm doing. Thanks for listening. I posted several articles that Sans News Bites was covering for this particular week. And the week is February 3rd through February 7th. And I got to thinking about one particular article, and while several of these are ransomware specific that I posted, i.e. this state or that city or county having ransomware attacks, there is an article that I think tops all of that. And you can go to the article commentary section of the blog at technology.jaredreimer.net to read anything that might interest you. So I'm going to start this off by saying that we've posted quite a bit, and you can find what you're interested in by going to the URL and weighing in on anything that interests you if you're not interested in this. And of course, you can send your files to me using any file sharing network like send.firefox.com or WeTransfer or Dropbox or Google Drive, and I will be happy to listen to it and consider it for inclusion into the podcast. My email address is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Let me know what you're talking about and all of that, if the comments allow you to do that. I can definitely listen to the audio and include it. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's talk about something that really caught my attention from the last batch of articles, and that is buildings online. And I got to thinking about this when I was reading this particular article, and I thought, why is a building online? Why is an elevator connected to the internet? This article talks about the elevator being connected to the internet. And I got to thinking about that as I'm reading this, going, if I need to go into a building and I'm told to go to the 25th floor, I'm going to take the elevator. Now, there are people who would take the stairs, and I admire people who would take the stairs to go 25 stories. And I know in an emergency, you would do that. And I also know that there are some people that may be able to go a few stories and then get tired. They couldn't go 25 stories. And I use the 25th floor as an example. I know the building I'm in is only 3 stories, and the steps in question are not the best, but they're doable. After 2 flights of them, I'm tired. Not because I'm out of shape, mind you, but those steps are difficult. They're short. I don't feel I have my footing, and it exerts a lot of energy out of me. But can you imagine if those were the types of steps that you had to go 25 stories, let alone 3? The elevator that I needed to take was, I would say, out. I had taken it to leave, and then when I got back, I could not take it again. And I understand it happens, but I don't believe for 1 minute that this particular elevator, or any of the elevators in this building, or any of the other buildings that are around here, are anywhere near the internet. I'm sure something happened and the elevator just wasn't responding to anything. And I remember calling the office saying this elevator was stuck. And somebody told me later the afternoon I got stuck in the elevator. And then that very weekend it was out. Now, getting back to this story, I wouldn't want to use an app to tell it that I want to go to the 25th floor. And then all of a sudden, I found that I was stuck. And that's what I wrote in the comments. Now, what good would that do? You know, the elevator being attacked when I would want to go to the 25th floor because that's where I needed to be. And I chose that I would rather take the elevator. I think most people would take the elevator. But there are other types of things connected to the internet. My door, for example, has an app for its lock because my sister thought it was a good idea for me to have a lock that I could control either by punching in a code or my phone instead of using a key and potentially losing my keys. I've always had a combination lock since I moved from one house to where I had been for a very long time. But since I've moved here, I talked about what I got and the Schlage lock, and it's awesome. But I don't have to worry about it, and I know that there is a key around here should something happen and I needed to get in. If I knew the lock was about dead and I knew that I couldn't get the batteries, if it was beeping and I had to leave, I would take my key with me so that I could get in. Or I'd figure out how to change its batteries. I do have batteries. And while we've had freeze watches and high winds as of late at the time of this recording, power outages would happen, and we have been alerted to power outages in a portion of the area that I live in, but I haven't been affected by the outages as of yet. I'm glad I got texted and emailed by the Department of Water and Power. I signed up for both because if I'm at the computer and my phone is elsewhere, or I'm on a call, but yet I'm also doing email, you know, I'll see it first. But the home or the building itself being connected to the internet could have catastrophic consequences if there was a power outage. Now, an elevator, if there was a power outage, would go out anyhow. But add the fact that it was connected to the internet and could be controlled from an app, would the app be able to give it enough power to get it to the next available floor and open its door so that everybody can get out? That's sort of where we are. And I read the article thinking, you know, if this entire building was connected to the internet, that would be kind of interesting. I could have it call the elevator well before I got there and even have the elevator help for me, maybe. Maybe not. But I know one thing. It is going to get very interesting because we're now in a time where this type of thing could happen. And I am a little worried about that. The article in question is entitled "Hackers Are Hijacking Smart Building Systems to Launch DDoS Attacks." Now, hijacking an elevator to perform a DDoS attack and not doing its job would bother me. You know, it just doesn't seem right. Honestly, doesn't seem right. It seems very wrong that some of this stuff, and I talked about my thoughts at the beginning, but now talking about the specific article title and what it's doing, you know, really would bother me. I know that my Wi-Fi connection is secure. It's got a very secure password. I don't remember the password verbatim, but I have it in a note in my email client. I should probably move it to a more secure place. For now, it's there and I can get access to it. But could you imagine if my lock was used to do that? Or an elevator? Or a refrigerator. I mean, it's all part of the building, right? It's all things that are there. I think it's something to think about. And like I said, if you find something else that you want to talk about, please feel free to comment, because I'm trying now to post more articles of interest that might cross my desk. And I'm going to try and read the news each time it comes out to see if something catches my attention. And I know that definitely caught mine, because I know I wouldn't want to be on an elevator necessarily that could go out because it's too busy attacking others, or its power got shut off because somebody hacked in and decided to cut the power to the elevator. Or power to the home, for that matter. You know, find the circuit breaker connected to the internet. And let's just push this button and let's see what it does. Oh darn, now you can't have access to it. And you're going to have to go find the box and figure out how to turn it on, because it won't work now. I don't know. This article really made me think, and I figured it would be a good talking point, but talking about it in a different type of light besides the bad. I mean, I do like my lock, and I do like my thermostat, and I do like my speaker downstairs, and I like my Google, but I know it's on my network, but could you imagine if they were not, and what I would be hearing from other people? So, let me know your thoughts. I want to talk about web design now. More specifically, error pages. And I'm not going to toot my own horn, and I know each and every one of you who do web development are going to develop their pages any way you want. But I'm not going to talk about web development in a way that you think I will. You see, every single website has some sort of problem somewhere. And your ultimate goal is to fix every single problem you can find. And some of this is authentication errors, i.e. 401. Others are website links broken, i.e. 404, page not found. And there are other status codes. And everybody knows that I rebuilt jaredreiber.info from web design done right to the Braille transcription done as a blind person web page, talking about how I used Braille transcription software called Braille 2000 to do the work, and my struggles and how the Talking Edition has become available to the general public. We released the software in November 2019, and the latest update is January 25th, 2020. I also fixed a date in the B2K file where I had the date wrong. It said the date was December 31st for the blog post, and it was January 26th. But that's text. That's not necessarily links or anything else. But I was actually almost going to write up about this new page that I've developed, but it's in beta now, and wondering what else I need to put up on it. But that's neither here nor there. The email I got proved to be very, very valuable. It was from a potential user who may end up checking out the Braille 2000 program after the interview that we did recently for 986 The Mix. That interview will be made available at some point through jaredreimer.info's Braille transcription page. So, have you ever seen a 404 page that says, "File not found. The file you requested is not found on the server." As well as this, you have also encountered a 404 error. I mean, the exact wording isn't the way the default page is at this current moment, but that's basically what the default page is. It's telling you the file can't be found, and additionally, a 404 occurred. And most users aren't going to know what that means. Well, as I was beta testing this website before really releasing it to the public, I ran into bugs. When I tested it, I knew exactly what was wrong. I turned somebody loose, and they're like, "Did you know this is what you have here?" It was like, "Huh?" And I looked, and the whole web page got screwed up, and I redid it. I don't know where he was, and I don't remember at the moment. But it turned out he was on my 404 page, and it wasn't what I had intended. But he did tell me where he was, and I was able to fix it. Then I redid the page, and today, February 4th, it turns out that page became valuable. It was included as part of a report sent to me by email, and I was able to see where they were on the website. They told me that they tried to get the documentation in RTF format and got this page. And they attached the page, and I saw exactly what happened. I then went over to the website and tried to download a copy too, and got the same thing. And I thought, what's going on? The file's up on the server. Sure enough, the file was the culprit. It wasn't the code. The code did exactly what I wanted it to do. And by rule, HTML cannot have spaces in the file. So I put underlines in the code. But I must have gotten an update of the file and never put the underlines in place in the original file, so when it uploaded to the server, the files were spaced, and I was looking for an underline, and I didn't get one, so I didn't know where to get the file, and I returned a 404. So, the web page, in practice, is quite interesting. I'm purposefully going to a broken URL, and it says, "We're sorry, something went wrong. You came from contact, and that may be wrong." So, I went to contact on purpose. It advises you to contact us so we may fix it. It's not our intent, and we need to fix it. So, because there was no page, it says it was done. That's because I went to the page directly and not from an existing page. But if it came from an existing page, like it did in the email, it said, you know, the existing page's documents. I include the browser. It says, use your browser, Mozilla Firefox 5.0, 10.0, Win64, X64, and the version and a Gecko. The browser could help me because then I could determine, well, is this a browser thing or what? I don't use it for anything. And it could be used for certain circumstances, but in this case, it was a direct file problem, not a browser issue. Thanks for sending your report to us. And if I go to menvi.org and go to contact there, it's going to give me an error because I need to spell it correctly. It's going to tell me, oops, I think you sent something at Menvier's one subdomains that might be broken. And it's friendly. If you'd like, go to Menvi's active web pages to look for the content again. And all of the active web pages are here. You could go back a page alternatively, and you'll copy it down to send an email. We have on that page a script called You Are Here, and we instruct them to copy it down and send us an email. If you get this page again, having known that you're trying to access something, please contact us. Please select Menvi Webmaster, and please let us know where you were, what page you were trying to access, and the nature of the error. I don't have the You Are Here script anywhere on jaredreimer.info's pages. I wanted to develop it differently. Scrapping that idea and building the 404 page the way I did, as discussed earlier. If you'd rather call Menvi, my phone number is available on this page. So, that is valuable. And as I was getting a phone call finishing that sentence, you could say that was probably very interesting timing. I bet you that caller will not leave a message. I've been getting a number of calls and nobody's left messages, and I refuse to answer my phone while doing something. I also say a thank you for visiting and have the copyright notice at the bottom. But the difference between Menvi's page and jaredreimer.info is that Menvi's page is pretty established. It's not going to necessarily have bugs every step of the way. We're not updating it much, if at all, now. And if you do find a bug, it's simple to just go back a page, copy that info, and get that to me through contact. Now I have since removed the contact form because of too much spam. The spam pretty much stopped after I've removed that form. And on jaredreimer.info's Braille 2000 page, when I developed it, I decided not to go the contact form route. So there are links to contact us, Bob and I, on the contact page, as well as phone numbers, email, iMessage, and so forth. So that is where we are at this time. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to talk about these types of error pages, not necessarily web design per se, but how various error pages may be of value depending on how you designed it back then. And I know that my jaredreimer.info page will continue to have errors because we are going to upload stuff and not code it correctly because we're all human. Whether I do it or whether somebody sent me code and I just implemented it, you know, it's going to happen. And I thought building the 404 page the way that I did talking above is perfect. It is a blend of both worlds. Here's where you were coming from. Here's what you were trying to do. Something's broken and you need to contact us so that it can get fixed. And sure enough, it worked. And because I don't have a form, I decided to build the web page this way. And I'm curious how you build your 404s. I've seen some that are humorous. Hey, this is a gnome here, and I'm sorry, you have good taste, but this doesn't exist anymore. You know, go to our homepage and try again, as I've seen on CD Baby. And there was a time I was trying to get stuff from CD Baby, and I think there was an outage because no matter what I tried, I was getting error pages all over the place. What type of funny error pages have you gotten, and what were you trying to do? Send an email and let's talk about some of the interesting ones. My email address is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. You can email, you can iMessage me, you can text or WhatsApp, 804-442-6975. And let's have a little fun, shall we? I think I want to end this podcast on a different note. Now, this is a serious article, and this is a serious topic, but I'm going to call this the Bonehead Award of the Podcast. Yes, folks. This was probably the stupidest move a criminal could ever make. There was a gentleman in the States that got caught after ordering pizza and using the same email address that he used to register whatever was registered to run his booter services. Now, when I blogged this article, I was actually being serious. And I had said, if I were to do such a thing, I would definitely be doing it in a different manner. While maybe I would get caught, I would want to make this a little harder. I would end up picking up the phone and calling over there. And we all know that restaurants may not have caller ID because they get so many calls that looking up a caller may be a little more difficult, but yet they have the address. But would you want to go through all those records when you get 10 or 20 or 30 calls an hour, and then you have an investigator coming in to find out if somebody ordered pizza because they think that you are tied to some sort of crime ring? Now, I don't know about you all, but if I were to do such a thing, I would not be such a bonehead and make my tracks easy by using the same email address as I would have registered my crime syndicate program. And while the gentleman in question would not necessarily be in the best health now, according to the article, maybe at that time that bacon and chicken pizza suited him just fine. Now, email tracing is quite easy to do. My only question is, how the hell did they find out that he used the same email address to order pizza? I mean, frankly, they would have had to call the pizza joint and serve them a type of warrant to find out if anyone had bought pizza using a particular email address, and who would have time to look at their records to do that? You know, we all know that the Whois database is the internet directory of web sites. Not necessarily who have content on them, but the domains themselves. And what we have here is someone who used their address, which they were able to obtain through public record, but yet how they tied that to his purchase of buying something to eat will remain a mystery to me. And I'm sure it's not hard to do if they track email addresses across the net. But I know I don't have time to track email addresses across the net. If somebody used an email address to have a receipt sent to them for the services, I would have to have a very good reason on why I should turn that data over. But since this guy did, and they had probable cause, and they probably did it legally, this particular guy must have the Bonehead Award of the podcast. If you want to learn more, you can go to my blog at technology.jaredreimer.net and go to the blog category called articles and finding the article Booter Boss Busted by Baking Pizza Pie. The gentleman is named David Bukowski, who lives in the Hanover Township in Pennsylvania. And he is allegedly responsible for launching tens of thousands of knocking off entire networks offline. And these customers who he helped were paying customers. And his service was the longest running to date until he was recently arrested. These types of attacks target many people and many different computers, and many different computers are used for such an attack. So, what we found out from the article is that this guy had an email address tied to what he was doing, and a search warrant served on that email address revealed that he was banned from several companies. And the article goes into a lot more detail, but the fact that you could subpoena an email address is definitely something interesting. And that's probably how they caught him, because that email address, as we said at the top of the show segment, was used to buy him something to eat. And they were able to review his email account. Now that is definitely something that I am not able to do. I'm not able to give you access to somebody else's email address on my network. And even if you had probable cause, I tell you nothing about the address, because people can use pseudonyms, and seeing that I get a lot of email, you know, a lot of it's spam, of course, but you can see where this is going. You don't want to turn people loose. And how they were able to monitor his email is beyond me. So, you know, unless they were able to track a particular time point and, like, look at server logs. I mean, they're not saying what email provider he was using, but, you know, my logs flush every day, and it's hard to even keep up. According to Krebs on Security, it's not unprecedented. And it could sound like a rookie mistake. Krebs, in this article, talks about that he had an article posted about Yuri JTK in quotation marks, Vinovalenko. And he was rounded up through an international crackdown. So I know law enforcement is very capable of getting what they need. And I'm probably sure this isn't the first time, but I think for 2020, this guy, as I stated, should be known as the Bonehead Award of the podcast. Vavilenko used his internet connection at that time to order a veggie Roma pizza. Now, I've had a Roma pizza. It's actually pretty good. I don't know if I've had veggie. And this article goes on and talks about more stuff. But that's the highlights of the article in a nutshell. You bonehead. Thank you so much for listening to today's program. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, here's how you can contact me. You can send email or an iMessage to the email address tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. If you have text messaging capability or you have WhatsApp, you can text me at 804-442-6975. If you have me on other social media, such as my main Twitter, you can message me over there. Or Facebook Messenger, you can also send me a message over there. We've got plenty of stuff on the blog, so if something catches your attention and you would like to either talk about it or come on the podcast to talk about it, we'd love to have you. Also, if you find any corrections to anything we say, like Sean did, please feel free to give your feedback and have your voice heard. I can't do the podcast alone, and there may be things that you would like discussed that I don't get, or that I may just skip because it doesn't interest me. That's where you come in. You're welcome to talk about anything on this podcast, technology related. I still have not forgotten some of the stuff that I have been listening to and have found of interest, including that Critical Insights that I attended, as well as the 2020 predictions. And recently, I found myself involved in a Fish Labs presentation dealing with social media. I have to edit that one, but that one is very, very interesting. And Fish Labs did a great job with that one. I was happy to attend it. So plenty coming up, and you'll just have to see what we have coming up for you. So until next podcast, everybody, thanks so much for listening, and make it a great day.